Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is happening? My name is Curtis, and we've got another huge show for you. Lots to talk about.
Lots.
On the line with me, my good buddy and producer extraordinaire, Cameron. Cameron, what's up with you, man?
Not a lot, dude. I'm just wondering, what is Dustin's job this week?
What is he this week?
Yeah. I mean, last week he was whaling. So
Dustin can't make it this week because he is a sous chef, and the restaurant is opening this weekend.
Yeah.
So
super high end Japanese restaurant in Japan.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And so whatever it is that a sous chef does, he's doing that right now.
Lots of prepping. Yeah.
Lots of prep. But anyway, we've got some cards. To talk about, well, I shouldn't say cards, some formats to talk about, right? But before we get into all that and kind of our topic for the week, I want to talk to you, Cameron, about the decks we've been playing this week. So you enjoyed some Modern, huh?
I did, but can I talk about one thing before I talk about my tournament?
Yeah, sure.
So, of course, it was Thanksgiving this week, so we had a lot of family get-togethers, right? And we went to Steph's family and kind of hung out there. And, you know, much to like my pleasure, I found out that a couple of the nephews are big Magic the Gathering fans, just starting out with Magic the Gathering, right? So they're 10 and 11 years old, respectively. And they're very new to the game, right? Like super excited. They have, you know, a big box full of just random commons, uncommons, and that sort of thing from maybe the past four set releases. As soon as Steph told me, my wife told me that we're gonna, like, you know, there are gonna be these kids here, I'm like, oh my gosh, I cannot wait. This is gonna be so much fun to finally, because I've never actually played with anybody and tried to help them learn the game of Magic, right? Mm-hmm. I've always been kind of the student, and I'm finally, I think, at a place where I can, I feel like I could, I'm comfortable enough now to kind of teach some of the rules.
You feel like you're ready to have some Padawan learners.
Exactly. I don't want to reference the early Padawan, whatever that stuff is, but yes. Yeah. But so first and foremost, I don't know if it's like Wizard's fault or what, but it's just the complexity of the game, maybe. There are not a lot of good tutorials specifically from Wizards to help kids who are just starting out learn how to properly play the game. I mean, these kids, I mean, they know the basics and everything, but just knowing like how things work on the stack, how battle damage is assigned, and how, you know, all these like little details that aren't, maybe they're defined somewhere in a rule book, but for kids starting out, I don't feel like they had that perfect grasp yet. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like, that was like my big takeaway from this. I mean, I built a couple like just basic Modern decks with like Lightning Bolts and you know, Serum Visions, just for the kid, just so he could like experience what like a blue red Delver deck is. I felt like that would be pretty easy for him to kind of play, and I just played some like Fairies variant or whatever. And it was super, super fun, but you know, I just came away with that complaint, I guess, with, I don't know if it's Wizard's fault or if that's just pointing them to good online resources that are available right now or what. And I just wanted your opinion on this.
Well, first of all, it's good that you took these kids and their new hope and love of the game and you introduced them to the cold, harsh, Darwinian existence of an actual Magic player, right?
Yeah.
And you're like, hey, kids, you want to learn some Magic? Let's learn with fairies. What kind of I mean,
it was very, very basic. It wasn't like I was flashing in spell service.
I want a yes, no from you. Did you cast a Bitter Blossom in these games?
Yes.
So, yeah. Anyway.
Okay, whatever.
You're a monster, and I think we can officially say that you've spent way too much time around me, because that is the exact kind of thing I would do. Not kidding you. I played against a young man one time when I was teaching him how to play, and I was playing Jeskai tokens. So many triggers.
Yeah.
Anyway, no, I agree with you. I have had a few experiences, not with kids, but with adults, where they're like, hey, you know, I know that you do this, like coworkers, and to them, it's kind of passingly funny, but they also, you know, want to know what it is. They assume it's role-playing, whatever, and I say, oh, well, you have an iPad. Download Duel of Planeswalkers. And many of them find the tutorial too complicated.
Hmm.
Right?
Wow, yeah.
And of course, my response to that is like, what are you, an idiot? Like, just read, you know?
Sure,
But, you know, it's very difficult for me to put myself in the shoes of someone that doesn't know the game that I've been playing since 1996. It's just, it's baked into me. It's just like, you know, whenever you're watching a sport with someone that doesn't know anything about sports and something happens, they want an explanation and you just kind of have this, you know, well, of course that happened because, you know what I mean?
Why are you looking at me when you're talking about this sports reference, by the way? But
well, Cameron, I don't have to worry about that with you because that would require you to actually observe a sporting event.
Sure.
So, anyway, you know, the listeners don't know how full of sport malapropisms you are. Like, for example, last week when you kept referring to me as the top 8 champion, Cameron, champion means you win the whole thing, man.
Hey, I was just excited to see you.
I'm glad. Anyway, no, but that's definitely something WotC, I think they know they need to work on it.
Yeah.
And I think it's, frankly, it's the digital end of their products. And Duel of the Planeswalkers is this weird thing where they feel like it needs to compete with Hearthstone. It needs to also be a better Magic Online. It also needs to be this free-to-play thing. But it's obviously where that's going to be. I mean, I feel like, you know, when you go to the kids section at Target or Walmart or whatever, there's the Duel decks. You know, and kids can play them and they enjoy them, but I don't think they're getting the full grasp of the game.
That's exactly it. Yeah.
And I would be the worst person to ask how that goes, you know, but it's also frustrating whenever you have the board game community. I'm looking at you here, Cameron, but some of the people that have played Magic a few times and they feel like they get it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, just because you want to understand a few of the mechanics, I don't know how many times I've heard this, people say, oh, Hearthstone is better because the mana. It's like, that's actually just functionally not true. Everyone has the same mana, so it's just simplified and also makes your decisions relatively straightforward. And I don't know. I just prefer the mana system, whatever. Anyway, Modern. So you played some Modern.
Yeah. So Friday night, played Modern, and I actually bought some Bitter Blossoms, which I was really, really excited about. I've been wanting to play like a blue-black fairies deck for a long time now. I just have been slowly trying to accumulate all the different pieces that I would need to make a decent deck or whatever. And I'm still missing some of the key components, I would say, mainly Mistbind Click. I don't own any of those yet, and so here I was on Friday night, all ready to play Blue-Black Fairies, and I'm just looking at it and playing it, and A, the deck just isn't good without turn two Bitter Blossom. It just, you're going to have a hard time competing. You need to see that in your opening hand. Yeah, and then I think Mistbind Click is the thing that you kind of need to really take control towards that end of the game, you know, turn six, turn seven, or whatever later on. And so I kind of chickened out with playing fairies, just strictly fairies, and I just kind of brewed together this weird Esper control deck, right? I mean, I took out the Lingering Souls that I was using, because I felt like I had a lot of three drops here, in this Esper build that I've been playing with, which has, Monastery Mentor in it as well. And so I substituted out the Lingering Souls, put in the Bitter Blossoms, and I had a really good time. I actually went all the way to first place and split for first with this other guy. And I had I had a really good time. And I can't tell if I did really well because people just weren't ready for Bitter Blossom or if Bitter Blossom is really that good of a card. And I think it all really does depend on, you know, your matchups and whatnot with that card. But I saw really good success with it. And it was hilarious to be playing against like it was a Grixis control deck, kind of like a, you know, had Terminates, it had Tassiger, it had a lot of the same kind of control-y cards that I had, yet he was terminating a single fairy token, you know, and then flashing in Snapcaster to terminate another one. And then I would just put in a Tassiger, and the guy just had a hard time dealing with that Bitter Blossom while I was swinging away with a 4/5. You know,
well, I mean, Grixis specifically seems like it would have a real tough time with Bitter Blossom unless they're Grixis twin and can just, you know, go over the top, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I had a good time. I played against a blue-red twin and actually main-decked Shadow of Doubt and Surgical Extraction just because I felt like I was really soft to combo matches, specifically the Valakut sort of variants that I see a lot of, and then, and then twin. So, and having just that much hand removal and then, you know, graveyard removal is actually pretty good against combo. At least people aren't prepared for it that turn one or turn two, which is awesome. So anyway, I had a good time.
It's kind of unnerving how often you're main decking extra paid effects to good effect in modern. But I think that speaks volumes to what's going on with the format, right?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I was watching LSV stream Amulet last night, a couple nights ago, and like three times he killed someone on turn two or turn three. You know, he had a turn two Titan kind of thing. It was like,
yeah,
man, you know, these kinds of effects, like extirpate, like Titans and stuff. I mean, it's sad that it's gotten to that degree, right? So I just played some Magic Online this week, kind of ramping into playing my Esper deck. And eventually Esper Mentor. I mean, that's where I want to do most of my work. I feel like, you know, the Esper Stoneblade deck, there's not so much variation there. I feel like I'm just like tinkering a card here and there, where the Esper Mentor deck feels like something I can really sink my teeth into.
For sure.
And work on quite a bit. I will say this. I've had awful results with Deathrite Shaman in the deck. And, you know, I didn't play the Star City event with Deathrite Shaman for a reason. And I thought, well, maybe I was just, that was just that batch of testing. So I went on Magic Online and banged out like six matches or so with Deathrite Shaman. And it just makes your mana awful, awful. As soon as you splash that one tropical island or that one bayou or whatever it is that you're using, Savannah, I suppose, could be there too. Your mana just sucks. Like it, and because the new versions of Esper don't play Dig Through Time, or like the most expensive card in your deck, I suppose, is Batterskull, but really it's Jace the Mind Sculptor. The ramp element of Deathrite Shaman is worthless. It's worthless. And I just really have had poor results with that. Now, on Magic Online, I don't have Jace Friend's Prodigies because they are like $70 a pop or something right now. And so I've just been kind of tinkering outside of that. But liking the deck, liking, for the most part, playing on Magic Online and just the tournament practice room. I don't feel like I'm quite ready for the two-man queues yet, but the downside of playing in the tournament practice room is you play against a real deck, a real deck, a real deck, and then dude shows up with 150 cards and it's Dragon Ramp. You know, and it's like, well, sure. Okay.
Here we go.
Yeah, and you play through it. You play through it because you don't want to disconnect on somebody. But, you know, I'm doing the whole dad thing where I'm trying to play cards and giving my baby a bottle and all this at the same time. It's quite an adventure.
Classic.
Anyway, dude, so we're kind of going to stay on topic with Legacy after the break and talk about where the format is headed. We'll be right back. All right, guys, so I promise next week we will be hitting up some standard and some modern, maybe some limited. I mean, I know that, you know, one of the things that we really try to be is the show that touches everything relatively quickly, right?
Yep, except Commander. But
except, yeah. Well, okay, every real format.
Yeah.
I mean, you know me, Cameron. I love alienating our Commander listeners. Yeah, it's like one of my favorite things.
Now, listener, hey, Commander listener.
Our one Commander. Time. Yeah, some people are like, hey, you know, I think Celso, I think he's a Commander player. And I know he occasionally listens, maybe, whatever. anyway, we're still on the outs over this whole Cheeto incident that we talked about. But I did want to bring up, before we start talking about, because we talked about Legacy a lot last week, obviously, because I played a Legacy tournament, but there was a big Legacy Open in New Jersey this week. And, dude, some really sweet decks. I mean, the deck that won is hitting me in all the right spots. You know what I mean?
It seems very Curtis.
Oh, man. This first place deck is like a deep tissue massage to my soul.
Nice.
Right? As soon as you say 4/9 of the Reliquary, I'm in. I'm ready.
Ears are
Where
burnt.
Are we going from? Yeah. What's happening now? Right? Anyway, they call it Punishing Abzan. Guys, it's low magro. Let's just get that out of the way. But it's a, you know, plays Mox Diamond, has a nice little green sun Zenith package for Ooze or Gaddock Teague or Dryad Arbor. Has two life from the loam. So a lot of times low magro plays, you know, three or four. And, you know, it's just relies a lot on Chalice of the Void combined with the Punishing Fire combo to lock out opponents. Cameron. Does this deck speak to you at all? Or
I mean, it feels very much like a lands deck in a lot of ways. And, you know, I have respect for lands, but it's just like I'm not into loaming my lands or anything like that, I guess. So I respect this deck. You know, I love Punishing Fire combo. But, yeah, I mean, you're never going to see me playing this deck.
I wish I were playing it right now.
Yeah.
I mean, oh. And by the way, it's like a lands deck, but with a soul. Okay?
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
This is like the difference between, like, lands is like Varsity Blues. And this deck is like Friday Night Lights. Do you see the difference?
You lost me at this metaphor, but...
These are football movies, yeah. Cameron. Oh, okay. These are football movies. Okay. But the other thing that really sticks out about, I mean, the other, you know, kind of top eight decks are what you might expect. Storms, Miracles. There's Storm, Miracles, Storm, Lands, Elves, Grixis, Delver. But Cameron, you noticed something when you looked at the top 32, which was what?
You know, there's a lot of one deck. And specifically, I think one card is to blame, right? We're seeing a lot of Miracles. I mean, I counted to the 25, and I think I saw 10 Miracles decks. And I mean, let's be honest, when Jund was a problem in Modern, when you were seeing, you know, 10 decks in the top 25 or whatever, they banned Deathrite Shaman. I don't know. Like, it seems like it's getting to that point where we're not seeing a consistent representation of Legacy decks. We're overly represented by Miracles.
I don't know if it's... I tweeted this out before, right? That I really feel like it's time for Top to go. It's time for Top to be shown the door. But kind of more importantly, LSV tweeted out that he was like, okay, it's... Can anyone honestly say that Top being in Legacy is a good thing? Now, I should point this out, and it is worth noting. If you remove Top from the format, Miracles / Counterbalance... could very easily still be a deck. Okay? Would it be as good? No. Not even close. But there are still ways to manipulate the top of your deck to know what's on top of it. You know, it just takes more work and it are much less mana efficient. So a Miracle / Counterbalance deck could still very easily exist. We don't know because Top is by far the best way to do that. It should also be pointed out that there is Top in other decks in this top 32, right? It's in the Painter's Servant deck and those kinds of things. And my take is just this. It's too easy to manipulate on in paper magic the clock whenever you're using Top. I mean, nobody else wants to say it this way, but it's true. It's too easy to bend the rules. You're not breaking them per se, but if you're activating Top, and because the way the slow play rules are worded, it has to do with if you're taking too long for a decision or to activate something. But if you're repeatedly activating something like Top, and looking at a new card several times within the course of 5 minutes,
mm-hmm.
you're not breaking the slow play rule, but you're still essentially able to slow play.
Mm-hmm.
And it's annoying. It's an annoying card. And as Legacy kind of fades into the distance, I would like Wizards to look at it from the perspective of not results, but as in what's fun to play. Because Cameron, if you and I are sitting to play a casual Legacy deck, and I show up with Counterbalance, what are you going to say about that, man?
You really love to stretch your time. Yeah.
Right? It's like, dude, we got things to do. We got to get to Chipotle, and you're sitting there activating Top over and over. So,
yeah.
What I'm trying to say is, Sensei's Divining Top cuts into your burrito time more than any other Magic card. Think about that for a minute. Ooh,
yeah. I don't like that.
Yeah. You should play Yanni behind that, Cameron. That's how deep that thought was.
That was quite deep.
But speaking of banning, I want to talk to you about this article. I sent it to you over Twitter. Like, everybody's been talking about
everybody,
this article.
Everybody.
So at MTG Goldfish, which, by the way, they've been crushing it with content.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like we're talking about one of their articles every week. Saffron Olive is one of the writers there. He's crushing it as well. I generally go out of my way to read every single thing he writes.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I'm not the first person to like say this, because there's a lot in the Magic community that are really digging his work. So if you're not, check it out. But essentially, this article, Cameron, why don't you sum it up for us?
So yeah, this guy, just talking about how Legacy is slowly fading into nothing, right? I mean, we're seeing no support in Star City and all these various other things. And his entire thing is like, well, Wizards is not going to support it because there's no money in it for Wizards, right? Which mm-hmm. is very, very true. And instead of what he thinks, I mean, like I think a lot of people would love, is getting rid of the reserved list. His idea is to ban the reserved list in Legacy. And so instead of having the dual lands, you would have shock lands in Legacy. Instead of having Lion's Eye Diamond, you would not have a Storm deck anymore. So, I mean, you know, there's like a couple things that are interesting that I like about this idea. And then, I mean, there's some things that I think you really have to think of, like, what makes Legacy Legacy? So I don't know. I mean, like, that was the essentially what I took away from this deck, from this article. It was a very good article, and more than anything, it just made me think. And we actually had some really good conversation during Friday Night Magic talking about this article specifically.
What was the vibe?
A lot of people were like, "No way is this ever going to happen!" Like, no way. Like, I mean, pretty much everybody kind of wrote it off as far as like being a bad idea.
Okay, so it's not going to happen, but I don't think that means it's a bad idea. Does that mm-hmm. make sense?
Yeah.
Wizards, I mean, they have fully hitched their wagon to Modern, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
On Magic Online, they seem a little bit more interested in Vintage.
Yeah, because they can make money from it. Yeah.
Well, yeah, they can make money from Legacy as well. This is a complicated thing, and I should say this from the perspective of someone that watches a lot more Vintage than I've ever played.
Mm-hmm.
I find Vintage games to be not engaging in terms of, like, they're very lopsided. They are what people who don't play Legacy think of Legacy. Like, yes, Vintage games can be long, but a lot of times there are these very explosive turns, and a lot of times if the opponent doesn't have a force or they don't have the right whatever answer, you know, they are very dead. Mm-hmm. Like, and so Legacy, I feel like, is much better balanced. You know, it's like Vintage is Mortal Kombat 2. And, you know, Legacy is like Street Fighter 2.
Okay.
Better balance, not as flashy, but a little bit more. You know, each fighter has their own thing going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
My reaction to this article at first was a very strong, no way.
Mm-hmm.
This is a terrible idea. It cuts too much. As soon as you say, hey, there wouldn't be dual lands and there wouldn't be Lion's Eye Diamond, it's like, well,
yeah.
Okay. Suddenly we're talking about a very different format, and we are. But when I get a little bit more into the nitty gritty, I do think it's worth talking about. So number one, I would say intuition would impact more things than people think.
Mm-hmm.
Intuition has had a pretty strong history in Legacy. Natural Order and Gaia's Cradle would obviously make elves like a lot worse, but Lion's Eye Diamond, the decks that you would pull that out of would adapt. Okay, so the big decks are Dredge and Storm. Storm in its current incarnation would be gone. Storm, as long as you leave a Storm card in the format, Storm finds a way. Okay? Storm in Modern doesn't look anything like the Legacy version, and I would suspect that if you were to take out Lion's Eye Diamond, you'd have some weird hybridization of the two.
Sure.
Where Dredge can totally be played without Lion's Eye Diamond. It is way less explosive, but totally fine. It can do a lot of the same things. It's just not, hey, I get to pitch my whole hand, haha, anymore. But then I would worry that if you were to do this, that the Delver decks would get really good. Like, really good.
Ban Delver. I mean, like, that's not out of the question, right?
Yeah, you might have to do some kind of tamping this strategy down or tamping that strategy down. I actually don't really care for Delver in the format anyway. I think it's a huge mistake. But if this meant saving Legacy, I would totally be down. I would love for people to experience this format and be able to enjoy it. And right now, it's just too expensive, man. It is just too... I mean, look at the cost of these decks in these top eights. If you are a new player, I mean, outside of you, Cameron, you know, it's impossible. It just feels impossible to get into it. And you kind of went through that journey, right? There was about a year's time where you were like, no way.
I was in and out, like, crazy. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And now you don't think twice about it, right?
Oh, no, I mean... yeah, I mean, I had a conversation with my wife actually as I was like playing cards with the nephews, and she was looking at some of these like, how expensive is this? You know, she's just pointing to like the flashy Jace card, and I was like, it's about 90 to 100, and she's like, oh wow, is that the most expensive one you have? I was like, no, you know. So I mean, that happens, right?
For sure. And then you chloroformed your wife.
Yes.
Shh. Don't ask about the volcanic islands.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, that was one moment where I had kind of come into a chunk of money and I went to buy two underground seas, and my wife was like, you're not going to play with them, right? You're just going to display them. Like, she thought I was going to like hang them up on my wall or something.
Yes, honey. Nope. That's exactly what I'm going to.
Nope. I'm going to use these until they become worth actual nothing. So,
yeah.
So yeah, sweet. Also, and we said this before, and if something happens to me, please don't let Dustin in.
Yep.
but no, I think this article is worth talking about from the perspective of making Legacy stick around. And I don't know, you know, look, Magic Online has a Legacy scene. It's not very strong because of the presence of Vintage, because WotC hasn't put in leagues yet. Hint, hint, put in Legacy leagues, please. But dude, it's just like, I love the format and I want people to experience it. And like whenever there's a Legacy Open like this weekend, I'm 99% more likely to watch multiple matches than I am with the Standard, right?
Yeah.
We have to do some research, by the way, this coming week to actually be able to talk about Standard soon.
You know, it was crazy actually this week. I think across the board, a lot of people aren't playing Standard this block or whatever you want to call it, just because, I mean, we're talking about, you know, the most popular card is worth $70-something. The second most popular card, Gideon, is worth what, 40, maybe even 50 by now. I mean, you know, it's getting to a point. I mean, I guess I've never been around other than just Theros Black, which, you know, there's a couple expensive cards, but I mean, the entry point to get to a really decent competitive deck in Legacy, or I'm sorry, in Standard right now, is kind of cost prohibitive. I mean, you can play some cheaper decks, but I don't know, like, it in itself seems to be an issue, to the point where Friday night, normally we have a really good Standard tournament turnout at my shop, and I mean, they barely got 8 people to play. I mean, that's kind of telling to me when my shop, 8 people will not show up for a Standard event.
Yeah, just looking at MTG Goldfish, which apparently we're talking a lot about today, you know, the standard decks go between $400 and $600.
Yeah.
And hey, if you're looking to play Modern, you can get a pretty decent, I mean, several of the Modern decks are in that price range, right?
And you're guaranteed for that deck to be around for more than a year, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
not guaranteed, but you have a better chance of it being around.
Yeah, and hey, look, this is going to happen from time to time. You're going to see standard dip. I was talking with someone else, and we were trying to determine if this is the most expensive standard ever. And I think the answer is no, but I'd have to look, because there was a standard deck with Elspeth and Jace and Lotus Cobra. It was a Bant deck, and it was very expensive. It was called Mythic, because there were so many Mythics in it, and played a bunch of fetch lands, etc. So that's the only deck that really springs to mind. But even Cobblade had this really weird effect on the format, where, yes, there were Jaces, but like the rest of the deck, I mean, was also expensive, but at one point was very cheap. So Stoneforge Mystics at one point were like $5, right? And a lot of people, and they were just rares in a set, and so people had them, you know? And whereas this, it was like these cards just, boom, like Gideon came out the gate, and hey, it's $40 and it's staying $40, like it or not. And, you know, hey, I understand people's hesitancy. I sold a bunch of my standard cards to buy into Magic Online some more. So I guess I'm part of the problem, Cameron. But that being said, it is our commitment to cover standard. And so we'll talk about it next week, and we'll say, hey, there's some decks in standard and they do stuff, right?
Indeed.
All right, Cameron. Are you ready to become a Spike?
Yes.
All right, Cameron. Every single week, we ask you to talk about and evaluate a card on your continuing journey to becoming a Spike. So, what's your card this week? We kind of talked about it earlier. It seemed like a good idea to discuss later on. What is it?
Yeah, yeah. And actually, this is good because I want your take on this as well. This week, you gave me Mistbind Click. It cost 3 colorless and a blue. It's a fairy wizard with a power and toughness of 4/4. It has flash, flying, and then champion a fairy. When this comes into place, sacrifice it unless you remove another fairy you control from the game. When this leaves play, that card returns to play. When a fairy is championed with Mistbind Click, this is awesome. Tap all lands target player controls. So, this is, I mean, this is a good card. I mean, 4 is a lot, but I mean, this is when you're wanting to really tempo the game out to, you know, destroy your opponent with your army of fairy rogues from your Bitter Blossom or whatever. I mean, I think the proper play is on their upkeep, you flash in Mistbind Click to, you know, to champion a Bitter Blossom or your Vendilion Click, or maybe it's just a fairy rogue or whatever, whatever you need to champion, I guess, to completely tap them out so that your next turn you can swing with a 4/4 in your army or whatever you have.
Right. Yeah. I would say this. The really experienced fairies players, whether it's Vendilion Click or Mistbind Click or Spellstutter Sprite, play them in the not obvious times, right? Sometime it is correct to Mistbind Click at their instep or Vendilion Click at their instep. You know, I think the most stereotypical thing to do is always V-click on their draw step.
Yeah, right.
And it's like sometimes that is just not what you want to do. And the same goes for Mistbind Click. I would say, you know, it is worth pointing out the way that the champion thing works is if they kill something in response to you using the champion ability, then the effect does not happen. And so, for example, you know, Mistbind Click comes in, you target Bitter Blossom, they abrupt decay the Bitter Blossom. Why they've been waiting so long to abrupt decay the Bitter Blossom, I don't know, but let's say they do. Then you do not get the effect and your Mistbind Click dies.
Yeah.
So that is the quote-unquote downside of this card. This card was the scourge of Standard. It was so brutal whenever it existed because, you know, you would play like 3 or 4 of, right? And by the way, 3-mana Jace was in this deck as well.
Okay.
You should look to see if there's any video on the old fairies decks and how they worked. But a lot of the people that you consider like well-known pros now, like Paulo Vitor D'Amadorosa, like he was a fairies expert.
Okay.
And really interesting to watch some of those guys play. Now, this is kind of in the infancy of coverage. back in Lorwyn. So what's the nicest way to say this? The coverage stunk.
Sure.
But there's a lot we're seeing about it. I would also point out that you can tell how experienced people are when they play against fairies when they kill these things in response, right? So if you just miss spine click, which you're right, you almost always want to do it in the upkeep because you don't want them to have the ability to draw the answer card, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I don't know how many times I've played against people where they can just blow up my spell stutter sprite in response to the trigger and I won't be able to counter anything, and they don't. But I have to do it just to try.
Sure, sure. Interesting, you know? Yeah.
And so that's just something that, again, Lorwyn fell in this area where right before Magic exploded. And so there's a lot of those cards that are kind of unknown. And as a player, you can take advantage of that. You know, I felt that was the case with something like Intuition whenever I was playing at the Legacy event. Whenever you play Intuition, how many players have to read it?
Yeah, they you know? Right, yeah.
And then you have the flip side where there are Legacy-only players where I play the Jace Friends Prodigy and they're like, wait, what does that do?
For sure, yeah.
So anyway, Mistbind Click is a card that I was stunned wasn't seeing more play than it is, because especially against some of these like Tron decks and stuff, like, ugh, what a nightmare for them.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so Cameron.
Yeah.
Lot going on with us. We are planning on relaunching the Patreon in 2016.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
More details to come. Just know that we are banging our heads together on that a lot.
Yeah.
So if you have any input, or you know, you're a Patreon subscriber and you'd like to see something or not something, let us know.
Yeah.
We know that we've been a little negligent with adding goals and all these kind of other things. And we want to get that all sorted out. So that's something that we're going to launch in 2016 for those people that have really been helping us out to an alarming amount.
For sure.
So Cameron, let's say someone has a suggestion or they don't like how you've been producing the show. Where could they find you on Twitter?
Well, they can do that on Twitter at Cameron_McCoy.
And I am at Curtis Now. If you would like to contact Dustin about, you know, being a chef and
yeah,
whatever... at MTG Dustin. All right, guys, we'll catch you next week.